Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
It is Free for All Friday here on the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. Just wanted to give you an update. I have received some alarming reports on our Patreon page at TrentHornPodcast.com that the iPhone app, the iTunes app, you get your podcast app on your iPhone, hasn't been updating new episodes of the podcast. So hopefully you're listening to this on the podcast app. I've been checking. Other people here at the office have been getting them updated. So, and I've seen on iTunes, it is updating. Like, I can see the most recent episodes there if you just go to iTunes and search Council of Trent. So I'm not quite sure what the problem is. I'm going to keep investigating. And if you keep seeing this a problem, please do let me know. Go ahead and write a comment under one of the episodes on our Patreon page. And also feel free to stop by and consider making a donation to keep the podcast going at TrentHornPodcast.com. You guys are great. And I love the support you've been giving us. But also, you can support us by letting us know if things aren't working, if something's broken. I check that page probably about every day, honestly, to see how things are going, to see if our premium subscribers, you guys have questions, have messages to send to me. And you get access to all that at TrentHornPodcast.com. So check it out. But if you experience technical difficulties with the podcast, go to TrentHornPodcast.com, leave a comment. Even if you're not a premium subscriber yet, you can still leave a comment on the general public post, and you can let me know if you're still having a problem with that. Otherwise, I will do my best to continue to resolve that. And so it's Free for All Friday, and I love Free for All Friday. I love every day of the podcast, but it's kind of fun on Friday just to be able to cut loose and talk about whatever I really feel like talking about. And that's the rule here, is that the topics we bring up are the ones that I am the most interested in, and I think would serve you, or at least you would think they're interesting. And they're esoteric, and some of them reflect, I mean, we have a wide variety of stuff here on Free for All Friday, but some themes continue to come up because I am a human being with specific hobbies and interests. I don't have an equally diversified set of non-Catholic interests that I can draw from for Free for All Friday. So I do come back to different elements. And something that I, of course, am a little obsessed with is safety, protocol, disasters. I have a morbid curiosity, a morbid fascination with it. And I also really like film and video because I used to be involved in film and television. I worked for the Maricopa Community College's television network. I was the guy who sat in the truck outside of the football games, running the engineering. I just sat there with four little knobs controlling the color and, you know, the range of the broadcast. And I just twiddled these knobs staring at football games for hours on end. And then people wonder why I don't like watching football or sports. Well, when you have to watch a football game for work and twist little knobs to make sure the color on their jerseys is right, you start to not like football as much anymore. So what I wanted to talk about today, kind of a blend between these two things, something I've been fascinated with recently, are public service announcements related to high-risk ventures or endeavors designed to educate people about dangerous practices. There are two that I wanted to talk about on the podcast today. So I'm not sure how long we'll go today. This might be a little bit of a shorter one, or who knows? I might get wrapped up in the content and we'll go for our normal 30 minutes. I'm not sure. It's Free for All Friday, man. I can be as free as I want to do today. So there's one on flying small private commercial aircraft, and another on cave diving. You might think they're very different. I mean, one, you're up 10,000 feet in the air in a small airplane. The other, you could be hundreds of feet below the surface of the earth in an underwater cave. What links them together? One would be the dangers that are involved. And two are two videos I found online that I think are very good at communicating the fact that you ought to be scared of these things. You ought to recognize danger is present. Because you have public service announcements that tell you about things you ought to care about. Like, oh, they're chopping down the trees, you know, they're killing the whales, they're killing Free Willy. Somebody is dropping trash and the Native Americans crying. You remember that public service announcement? They made fun of it on The Simpsons. That old public service announcement from the 70s where the family throws trash out the car window and it pans over to a Native American. He looks down on it and there's just like this little tier. They made fun of that on The Simpsons, where the Simpsons throw out their trash out of the car and a Native American looks at it. Oh, I think that's where they moved Springfield, because the town had become so overrun with trash, they moved the whole town. So it was just a giant trash dump. So the Native American, he looks down and sees this little piece of garbage and begins to have a tear. And then his friend walks up and says, don't look behind you. And then he just screams because of what had happened to the town. So sometimes, though, that's one of the most famous public service announcements, the crying Indian about the littering. The one, if I had to pick the most famous public service announcement, though, easily the most famous one for me would be "This Is Your Brain on Drugs" from the 1980s Partnership for Drug-Free America. And what I love about it is that it's so ineffective and campy, not like the other videos that I'm going to share with you here in a moment that are terrifying, actually, that they will, you know, send a shiver down your spine a little bit to get you to be afraid of something. So a good public service announcement gets you afraid of something to understand that it's a threat, something you should take heed of, but not to do it in an overly threatening way that shuts down your ability to process the information. So this public service announcement, you'll see why it doesn't work. This is your brain on drugs. So just listen to it. It's a guy in a kitchen and he cracks the egg in the pan, but here it is.
Is there anyone out there who still isn't clear about what doing drugs does? Okay, last time.
Now, first I wonder, this guy, like, has he just been sitting in his kitchen all day telling people about drugs? What do you mean, last time? Okay, go ahead, sir. Go ahead and tell me.
This is your brain. This is drugs.
So he cracks the egg and puts it in the pan, and the egg is cooking.
This is your brain on drugs. Any questions?
Yes, I have so many questions. What does that mean? Like, if I do drugs, does my brain literally cook like an egg? Will it, like, smell like eggs? Can I get bacon as well? Will my brain taste good? Should I put hollandaise sauce on it? Like, what's going on here? I mean, I get what he's saying is that you cook your brain, you hurt your brain when you use drugs. But the metaphor is so removed, it just becomes campy, and you're like, wait, what's going on here? As my friend John, who I used to do pro-life evangelism with, used to say, what is happening here? So that's not that effective. However, I've been obsessed, there are two things I used to be obsessed with a while ago, reading about extreme sport called cave diving. So where you take scuba tanks, you go and explore underwater caves. So we'll get to that here in a second, because there's a great video about the dangers of cave diving that drives home this public service announcement, especially for people who are certified as open water divers or even open water diving instructors who foolishly get themselves killed in underwater caves. So that video is good at kind of scaring you and showing you the dangers you may not be aware of. The other one is a video that comes from the Civil Aviation Safety Authority from Australia, CASA. It's an Australian organization, Civil Aviation Safety Authority. And it is about a danger that occurs in small private aircraft flights. Now, on other podcasts, I've talked about crew resource management, airplane disasters. People always think, Trent, aren't you scared to fly in airplanes? I'll say, actually, no, I'm not scared to fly in commercial aircraft. You know what's funny? I went on the train the other day. I went on the train up to Disneyland. I talked about that on the podcast. And I forgot a little bit to say I usually say a prayer when I get in an airplane because, you know, why not? You know, I still have, fears and apprehension like anyone else. And I always ask God to pray for travel, whether I'm in an airplane or my family and I, we get in a car and we drive to go see our in-laws or my parents. You know, when going on a journey, it's always important to invoke God's protection when you're doing that. But the statistics, though, I didn't think of it on a train, but trains are actually more dangerous than planes. Commercial aviation in the United States is one of the safest ways to travel. You should be more apprehensive about driving to the airport than getting on a plane. Commercial aviation, very, very safe. Private aviation is a different story. So if you look at the statistics of private airplanes, someone who is not certified to fly people for money, you know, you just go through your hours, take classes to fly in a little two-seater, four-seater, eight-seater airplane, these private aircraft, the fatality rates for them are closer to cars. So they're actually, it's still relatively safe. But getting in a private airplane with someone is as dangerous as getting into a car with somebody. So there are not nearly as many private airplane crashes as there are car crashes, but there's not nearly as many people flying private aircraft. They're not held to the same safety standards as commercial aircraft, and pilots of private aircraft are not held to the same standards either. One of the things that can go wrong for an amateur private airplane pilot, and I see them all the time here because at 2020 Gillespie Way, we're right across the way from Gillespie Field. Here in El Cajon, California. So I'm always seeing planes taking off one after the other after the other. And I actually really like it. It's kind of a whimsical feeling. It's like, what was the name? I want to say it's Cape Suzette from Tailspin, the old Disney animated cartoon where Baloo is like a 1920s, Baloo from the Jungle Book is now a 1920s airplane pilot and, you know, set in this, you know, thing with sky pirates. Tailspin, you got to watch it if you haven't seen it before. Where was I going with that? I don't know. Oh, whimsical. Here, all these planes flying around all day like in the show Tailspin. So seeing that, though, I sometimes see them go off, and these private pilots, there's different levels of certification for being a private airplane pilot. When you begin to fly a private airplane, you begin to fly, you learn to fly according to something called VFR, or visual flight rules. So visual flight rules is just like what it sounds. You get up in the plane, you're flying, you go up in the air, and you learn to keep the plane steady and clear by keeping the wings level with the horizon around you. So you look at the horizon, clouds that are around you, buildings, towers. You use that to keep yourself flying straight and level to know how high up you are and what angle the plane is at. So you would fly with visual flight rules. There are different kinds of accidents that occur with private airplane pilots, amateur pilots, with varying degrees of fatalities. Like the most common ones, you know, you'll see are overshooting or undershooting runways, for example, or, you know, taking a landing too rough with too much speed, so you hop or skip along the runway. And they have lower fatality rates than a particular kind of accident that's called VFR into IMC. That stands for a pilot using visual flight rules going into instrumental meteorological conditions. It's a fancy way of saying you're an amateur pilot, you're used to looking at the horizon to orient your aircraft, and you fly into clouds or smoke or haze or darkness without any lights or a horizon to guide you. So suddenly you're a VFR pilot used to having the horizon to make sure you're flying your airplane straight and level. Because when you're in an airplane, in a small aircraft, your mind can play tricks on you. The gravitational forces of rotating the pitch or the yaw, wouldn't be the yaw, but the pitch or the roll, even the yaw, actually. That's the three different ways an aircraft can rotate. Your roll or your pitch can affect you. You might trick your mind into thinking you're level when you really actually aren't and you're turning. So if you see the horizon, you can quickly correct yourself. But if you can't see a horizon, so if like most commercial airline pilots, they'll fly into clouds and they can't see around them. And that's okay because they fly under what's called IFR, which is instrumental flight rules. So with instrumental flight rules, you learn how to only look to fly the airplane relying solely on your instruments. So you have your altimeter, you have your artificial horizon, which tells you what the angle of the plane is, tells you it's the speed indicator. And amateur pilots who are VFR, what they will do is they'll wear a thing called a hood, and they put it over their eyes, and it keeps them from peeking out of the cockpit and trains them to fly the plane with an instructor next to them by only looking at their instruments. Now, there are cases where there was a plane crash a few years ago in Bakersfield. It was a sad case. It was a dad with his wife and his kids. He was flying them to Nevada. And he ended up, he was VFR, but he flew into IMC conditions, flew into weather. And he didn't want to go too high because he didn't have oxygen for his passengers. So he flew into clouds, and it looks like he became disoriented and he crashed and they all perished. VFR and IMC accidents have like an 80 or a 90% fatality rate. They're extremely dangerous. And it just happened. You think, oh, I'll be fine. You know, you're used to VFR and you're taking off. The weather looks okay. You go into it and then you hit the clouds and then you're in trouble and you don't realize it. So there was a study that was done decades ago, and it's been recreated since. The study is a little different than how people summarize it. The basic gist is this: when VFR pilots go into IMC, when they lose sight of the horizon around them, on average, in 3 minutes, they will crash the plane. On average, 3 minutes, they will become spatially disoriented, and they will crash their aircraft, send it into the ground. So this PSA is designed for amateur pilots to tell them this can happen to you, and to not be so cocky about flying, and to take IMC and deteriorating conditions very seriously as a VFR pilot. So the CASA put this out. The PSA is called 178 Seconds to Live. And it's perfect for me to share with you here on the podcast because there's not really that many visuals. Because, of course, when you fly into IMC, you can't see anything anyways. So here, let me play it and I'll offer commentary here and there.
Runway 35, clear for takeoff.
The sky is overcast and the visibility poor. That reported 8 kilometer visibility looks more like 3. And you can't judge the height of the cloud. Your altimeter says you're at 1,500 feet, but your map tells you there's local terrain as high as 1,200 feet. There might even be a tower nearby, because you're not sure just how far off course you are. But you've flown into worse weather than this, so you press on.
And that's where you make your fatal mistake. Oh, I'm worried about the towers, it's getting really cloudy. I'll just pull up a little bit, things will be fine. Of course they will.
You find yourself unconsciously easing back just a bit on the controls to clear those non-too imaginary towers. With no warning, you're in the soup. You peer so hard into the milky white mist that your eyes hurt. You fight the feeling in your stomach. You swallow, only to find your mouth dry. Now you realize you should have waited for better weather. The meeting was important. But not that important. Somewhere a voice is saying, you should have turned back. You now have 178 seconds to live.
So just to imagine you're flying, it's just gray outside of the plane. You can't see anything. Now you've become disoriented. This is what will probably happen to you.
Your aircraft feels on an even keel, but your compass turns slowly. You push your rudder pedal and add pressure to the controls to stop the turn, but this feels unnatural, so you quickly return the controls to their original position. That feels better, but now your compass is turning a little faster.
So here's what's happening now. You think you're flying straight and level, but you've entered a turn, and when you're in a turn long enough, the fluid in your ear that tells you whether you're balanced, you know, we know whether we're up or down based on the fluid in our ears. But the problem is when you enter a turn in an aircraft, the fluid can become settled and you can feel you're level, but you're still turning. So what happens here is you don't trust your instruments, you trust your senses, which are wrong, and so you don't correct the turn. And you end up going deeper into a turn when you think you're flying straight and level, and then the more problems arise.
And your airspeed is increasing slightly. You scan your instrument panel for help, but you don't find any. It all looks unfamiliar. You're sure this is just a bad spot. You'll break out in a few minutes. But you don't have a few minutes. You now have 100 seconds to live. You glance at your altimeter and are shocked to see it unwinding. You're already down to 1,200 feet. Instinctively, you pull back on the controls, but the altimeter still unwinds.
What's happening is you're in what's called the graveyard spiral. You think your brain has been tricked to think you are at level flight and the plane is descending fixed wings. So you think you're just going down. So naturally, pull on the stick and you'll go up. But you're in a turn. You're not fixed wings. You're not descending like that. You're in a spiral. So when you pull back on the rudder, what's happening here is that you're now going deeper and tighter into the turn, and counterintuitively, pulling back on the stick, which would normally make you go up, actually makes you go down faster.
The engine is into the red, and the airspeed's almost there too. You have 45 seconds to live. Now you're sweating and shaking. There must be something wrong with the controls. Pulling back only moves that airspeed indicator deep into the red. You can hear the wind tearing at the aircraft. You have 10 seconds to live. Suddenly, you see the ground. The trees rush up at you. You can see the horizon if you turn your head far enough, but it's at an unusual angle. You're almost inverted. You open your mouth to scream.
And that's it. That's the end of the PSA. Ooh, gives you chills, right? Well, it's supposed to do that. Now, if you're not a private airline pilot, you know, it probably won't affect you that much to think about, but it does give you cause to think. Now, I don't let this scare you about flying in a commercial aircraft. This kind of thing, people who fly commercial aircraft are mandated to be IFR certified. If you're flying people around, like on a regional airplane or a jumbo jet you get on, those guys know this isn't going to happen to them. They have autopilot, backups, redundancies, and they have training to know not to become spatially disoriented when they enter clouds or they fly at night, things like that. But if you're an amateur pilot, you're someone who just, you know, flies on the weekends and, you know, whatever, it's a nice hobby and you just started learning how to fly, you don't have an instructor anymore, you might start to take chances. You went into clouds once and you broke out, things were fine. But sometimes you can tempt fate. You can only do that so many times and things go wrong. So let's go to another one. This is from, it's a safety video, and the host is the president of the National Speleological Association, the Caver Association, people who explore caves, spelunkering. So what happens here, so now instead of going up in the clouds, let's go down to underwater caves. Underwater cave diving can have a very high fatality rate, and the people who are killed are the inexperienced people. Most professional cave divers are actually fine when they explore underwater caves. They treat it seriously. They have redundancies, backups. They have training. Most people who get killed, like in Florida especially, where they have a ton of underwater caves, are amateur scuba divers, even scuba diver instructors, open water instructors. They're swimming in a lake, they're diving, and they see a cave, and they think, I got a light on me. I'll just go in. And they don't realize the hazards that await them. So this PSA is meant for scuba divers, instructors who are open water certified, who would be tempted to do cave diving without training, which is extremely dangerous. So I think this video is actually done very well. Like the last one really makes you stand and be like, I don't want to do VFR and IMC. This one makes you, I don't want to go into a cave without training. So I think it's done very well.
Bill and Fred start the dive staying in open water like they've been taught. After a while, curiosity leads them to the cave mouth.
Okay, so the host provides a fictional example of two divers going into a cave.
Fred has a dive light with him, and they discover they can see pretty far back. At this point, they make a critical error to go in just a little ways. These divers know better. They were taught not to go into caves. Perhaps when they thought of caves, they thought of a dark, scary place. But the cave isn't dark and scary. Perhaps they rationalize to themselves that the rules don't apply here. Perhaps one of them went into the cave before and got away with it. Not this time, though.
Okay, so they're going in.
At first, they're having a great time. The water's air clear and warm. They may even pass a sign trying to remind them, one last time, to turn around before it's too late.
And if you can't see the sign, you can look up cave diving sign on the internet. It's grim. It says, stop, prevent your death, go no farther. Trained divers have died in this cave. And it has a picture of the Grim Reaper beckoning you to come forward with skeletons wearing scuba tanks next to him. So it should scare you. You're warned, but you think, oh, I'll be okay. But you haven't thought of the hazards ahead.
But they go deeper in, not realizing their kicks and bubbles are stirring up silt and forming a cloud that completely obscures the way they came in. The same way they'll have to find their way out. One of the most serious dangers of cave diving has closed in behind Bill and Fred, but they don't even know it. Yet. Eventually they decide it's time to go. But which way do they go? The silt has masked the right passage out. They're lost. And now it's simply a question of whether they're lucky and find their way out before they run out of air.
That's not the only way. So if you go into a cave without training, you could your flippers, you could disrupt silt from the cave walls. You turn around, it's just soup. It's just dusty, dirty water, you can't see where to go in the cave, and you risk running out of air before you make it back out. But as the video demonstrates, there's lots of other ways that you could perish inside a cave. I have the second part of the video here. Let's make sure. I'll play that here in a second. Even if you don't disrupt the silt, you could become lost. You could go in to a cave, turn around, and see two cave holes going back and take the wrong one and get lost in the cave and then run out of air. Or your light, if you take a light in with you, if the light fails, you're in pitch black darkness and your hopes of getting out are basically zero. And so you could perish in that way. And you, because you're just a random scuba diver who thought he'd pop his head into a cave, not realizing it's highly dangerous and you need specialized training. Trained cave divers, what they do to go into an underwater cave is they use different rules. First, usually rules of three. They have three times as many lights as they need. So if one light fails, they leave. They just leave. They abandon the dive. But they have three lights. In case a light fails, they have two backup lights. They have three times as much air as they need. One-third to get in, one-third to get out, and one-third as an emergency reserve in case they or their buddy is running low on air. They use guidelines. They put a guideline down to follow the line back out of the cave, and they study how not to become entangled with it. So these are tips and skills that you have to be taught from other people, and if you're not, you'll go into a situation where being amateur at something, we will be punished harshly, if not fatally. Here's another part of the video.
Even avoiding silt and a working light are no guarantee. Turning to leave, they discover that what seems to be the way out isn't. Once again, it's simply a question of luck. The game is Russian roulette. Will they find their way out first or run out of air first? Or it may not matter whether they're lost. They may use too much air going in, not realizing they won't have enough air to make it back to the entrance. Or a free-flowing regulator unexpectedly exhausts one of their air supplies deep in the cave, and there's not enough air to share to get them both back. One or both are already dead. They just don't know it yet.
Accidents like these end very grimly. We have found marks on the walls where victims have thrashed around in their final desperation.
We found sorrowful last words scratched in the scuba tanks. We found evidence of struggles between buddies over the remaining air.
I love this part. Listen.
If I'm scaring you a bit, good. That's the point. But I'm not telling you you can never dive in a cavern or cave. What I'm telling you is that to do it right, you need to have the training.
Lamar Hires, the chairman for the National Speleological Society. He's got a fabulous red beard, by the way. The video's online. It's called Deceptively Easy Way to Die is the name of this PSA. And I just love how matter of fact he is. If this scares you, good. It's supposed to. That is the proper use of the term scared straight. You know, there's the sense of being ridiculous and hyperbolic of trying to scare people. It doesn't come off right. But when you can put forward to someone that something is of grave harm to them and do it in a matter of fact, factual way. So that's the key. Matter of fact, you're not hysterical and you have the facts to just soberly say, this is what's wrong. And you could do this with anything. It doesn't matter. Flying or caves. Talk to your own kids about, you know, or people about drugs, about spiritual harms, about grave sins that can lead them into everlasting damnation. But the way we should do it is, here are the facts, here's what can happen to you, here's what you can do so this does not happen to you. And it's presented in a sober, clear, and objective way. So, hey, I managed to bring our Free For All Friday around to, it could be faithful Free For All Friday even, you never know. So, oh my goodness. But I hope that that's helpful for you. What I try to do on Free For All Friday is give you guys something fun, you know, let down our hair at the end of the week, but still tie it into something we as Catholics live out our lives day in and day out, and we can find useful skills in a lot of different places. So I hope that you find this podcast useful. By the way, be sure to go on to iTunes, Google Play, leave a review for the podcast. It really helps people come to learn more about the Council of Trent. So thank you guys so much for stopping by today. I'm grateful for all your support. Go to trenthornpodcast.com, and I hope you have a blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.